Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
This week on Martyrs Row,
is there one Satan or two? How many are there?
Do Seventh-day Adventists have the Ark of the Covenant?
Do all snakes eat dirt or just the bad ones?
Are angels still falling out of heaven?
I don't know.
Let's find out.
3, 2, 1.
Shmona and Guria. Saint Shmona and Guria, citizens of Edessa in Mesopotamia, suffered in the persecution of Diocletian for their steadfast confession of Christ. Being accused as Christians, they were brought before the governor and commanded to sacrifice to the idols, which they refused, saying that they would offer only the sacrifice of praise unto the living God. For this, they were bound and cruelly tormented, yet bore all with meekness, praying for their persecutors. When neither threats nor pain could move them, they were cast into prison, where after many days they were brought forth again and strangled with cords. Thus these faithful friends joined in life and death, sealed their testimony with one spirit, showing that the love of Christ is stronger than death, and that no bond is greater than the fellowship of the saints. Anno Domini 309.
Hey, Paul.
What's up? Devon.
Have you ever heard of a man named Ron Wyatt?
Yes.
Really?
But I couldn't tell you anything about
him. You don't
know why? The name is just familiar.
Not Ron White.
That's a different guy.
That is a different guy. That's Ron White was on the comedic tour with the Southern guys, the hillbilly guys.
Yeah.
Larry the Cable Guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
the other.
Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader Guy?
Yeah. Foxworthy.
Yeah, Jeff Foxworthy.
Wait, was Ron White with them? That seems right.
I'm pretty sure he was.
I think he was. This is Ron Wyatt.
But Wyatt, I've heard of him, but I couldn't tell you anything about him.
All right. In 1978 to 1982.
Sounds like I just lied about that. No, I do, but like I don't know.
I know the guy. I'm just don't test me on it. Like 1978. Yeah,
just
yeah.
Just don't
yeah.
test me on it.
Like 1978. You just like repeating it as I
he
say
said,
it.
19.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so from 1978 to 1982, over this 4-year span, while exploring caves under the Garden Tomb area north of the Damascus Gate, Wyatt said he found a cave system leading to a chamber containing the Ark of the Covenant.
Nice.
Along with several other biblical artifacts. He claimed the Ark sat beneath a crack in the rock, directly under where Jesus was crucified, and that Christ's blood had dripped through the crack onto the mercy seat of the Ark. He identified this as the literal fulfillment of the atonement symbolism, the blood of the Lamb Christ sprinkled on the Ark's mercy seat.
Dang.
Wouldn't that be crazy if it was true?
That's what I was going to say. I was like, that's actually wild, but it sounds not true.
Well, so a couple of things. The Garden Tomb is a site that is a holy site because of Constantine's mother-in-law.
Mm.
So nice. 300 rough years after that. Like, so here's the thing. A simple thing about this is if you study or you look at archaeology in Jerusalem itself, there are a lot of things that are inconsistent about holy sites, particularly Christian holy sites, to the biblical narrative.
Mm.
One really clear example of that is Church of the Holy Sepulchre. So where they believe that the cross was, There's a church built around that site, and that site is inside the old city gates. Problematic. Because crucifixion was a Roman death
practice.
That I think they nailed it. I don't think they practiced it.
Yeah, that's true. They didn't need to practice.
They literally nailed it. no, they so they would crucify people and they would put the crosses up outside the city gates. The reason they did that is because being hung on a cross was the death of a failed insurrectionist.
Yeah.
So it basically the death of a false messiah.
Yeah.
Because an insurrectionist would be coming up against the Roman government saying with military force trying to overtake the Roman government.
Yeah.
And of course Caesar was God, so thus a false messiah's death. they would have understood that crucifixions don't take place inside the city walls, takes place outside, so that as people walk into the city, they're seeing those crucified, so they know not to raise up an insurrection.
Yeah.
Right? So, problem number one.
yeah. I mean, and that's the thing that we see in other cultures, too, where they'd, on spikes, hang up dead people outside of people that they had killed outside of the gates.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, as you're walking toward, and this is, we see this a lot of different cultures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, plus you wouldn't leave someone hanging to die.
Inside where it's stinky.
Yeah, you wouldn't do that.
No.
Inside where it's stinky.
It's like, ugh.
So, Wyatt said the chamber also contained the original tablets of the Ten Commandments, the table of showbread, golden altar of incense, and other temple furnishings. A sample of Christ's dried blood, which he claimed to have taken for testing, allegedly showing a unique chromosome count, 23 from the mother and 1 from God. That is a unique chromosome count.
How did he just know that? It's like, that's interesting.
I'll give you some more information in a second.
Okay, yeah.
Wyatt said that during his excavations north of Jerusalem's Damascus Gate in the area of the Garden Tomb, he discovered a narrow passage leading to a natural cave. He reportedly crawled inside and found himself in a stone chamber that contained a large stone box, which he said held the Ark of the Covenant, other gold-plated temple objects, and a black substance, dried blood, that had dripped onto the lid of the Ark through a crack in the ceiling, a crack he believed extended up to the surface of Golgotha, the crucifixion site. He believed it did. He didn't know for sure.
He's like, listen, guys.
No, that's not the information. He claimed he saw the Ark only briefly as the chamber was cramped and covered in debris. He said he did not remove the Ark or any items from the chamber, believing God did not permit him to do so at that time. Wyatt said that later, on a return visit, 4 Israeli government officials entered the cave, saw the Ark, and were allegedly struck dead by divine power. After that, he claimed the authorities sealed the chamber for protection. In recorded interviews, 1989 to 1998, he said, "When I first entered that chamber, it was very tight. I could see the Ark in the stone box. The lid was cracked, and the black substance had run down from the crack in the ceiling onto it. I knew what it was." He claimed that after this experience, angels appeared to him in the chamber and told him the contents would be revealed to the world at an appointed time, specifically after the Sunday law crisis, a reference to his Seventh-day Adventist prophetic interpretation.
Now it's all coming together.
And thus revealed. So interesting guy.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
I love how a lot of this is just like, so I went into this cave, and I saw this thing, but only briefly.
Yeah.
Just real quick.
So,
and I saw this other stuff, and I knew what it was.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, what was above it? I'm pretty sure it was.
Yeah. Well, and within that, there's description of like, I didn't go all the way into the cave because it was really cramped. And I looked and I saw. But then later in interviews, he says, I went in there and saw everything.
Yeah.
So you're like, which one was it?
Which one? Yeah.
But then also the assumption that...
Also, four other guys got in there and they all died.
Yeah, they all died.
Yeah. How did... You barely got in there. How are four people squeezing in?
But also, I love the idea that he like dug underneath, found this secret chamber, and then was like, ooh, there's some black stuff. That must be the blood of Christ that came down and fell upon the mercy seat, which is like solidifying Christ as the sacrificial lamb.
Because that's definitely the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah, and that would definitely not be recorded in scripture.
I didn't get close to it. I didn't touch it because, you know, I didn't think I was allowed to. Like, well, then how do you know that's what it was?
Yeah.
I just know. Trust me, bro.
There is interesting things about this. I feel like we could do a whole episode on the Ark of the Covenant through scripture, which would be kind of fun.
That would actually be really fun.
Yeah. And like figure out where it was and where it went.
Yeah.
That could be a fun one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there's a passage, I believe in Zechariah, where he basically a prophetic word of the idea that the Ark will no longer be in the temple and it will no longer be necessary.
Mm, yeah.
Is basically the paraphrase statement, which is interesting. But so let me tell you who Ron Wyatt was.
Okay, please.
Because right now it sounds like he's a Seventh-day Adventist archaeologist.
Yeah, right.
Not what he is. Ronald Eldon Wyatt was a certified nurse anesthetist.
Like anesthesia?
Yes.
Okay.
He trained he trained in medical anesthesia, not archaeology or theology.
Even better.
He was definitely an American.
He's a male nurse.
But he was a devout Seventh-day Adventist whose faith heavily influenced his explorations. Now, yeah, so beginning in the 1970s, Wyatt spent his own money to lead expeditions to the Middle East, claiming to have found Noah's Ark, Mount Ararat region of Turkey, the Red Sea crossing site, the real Mount Sinai in Saudi Arabia. That's an interesting conversation.
He's been busy.
Sodom and Gomorrah, ash remains, and the Ark of the Covenant beneath Golgotha in Jerusalem. He founded...
This guy just woke up and he's like...
I found it all.
I got it.
He founded Wyatt Archaeological Research, okay, which is like where he promoted his discoveries. Now, the interesting thing about this is you might think, again, an amateur archaeologist.
Yeah.
Which to me goes...
I polished some rocks in my day.
If I right now in 2025 went over to Israel and was like, I'm just going to dig up underneath this holy site, there's no way they would let me
Good
do that.
Good luck.
Yeah. I mean... To live in the 1970s, man, it must have been awesome.
Freedom.
That honestly, that's the number one reason you wouldn't be able to make Raiders of the Lost Ark now.
Yeah, they couldn't do anything.
No, because people would be like, what? How are you going to... How are
Do you
we
get a permit for that?
That? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Back then, you could do whatever you wanted, apparently.
They'd show up to like wherever the temple was in the end of...
Yeah.
And it's just like, they just show up and there's just like this purple like stanza. And then they're like, how'd that get here? Do you guys buy a ticket?
Yeah. Oh, man. But here's the thing.
Wait, where do I buy a ticket? The ticket desk is over here.
I brought my shovel, sir. You can't have that.
No, what are you doing? You got to run through the scanner.
Yeah.
And we metal own detector. All of
this. You can just look at it.
Yeah.
If you want to make things up, you can. I don't care, but...
There's glass.
You can't go in there.
There's an invisible bridge there. Okay.
But here's the thing. I wanted to look up, like, okay, if he is Seventh-day Adventist, but he's not, like, he's not a minister or anything of their...
He's just a regular
guild.
Attender.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then...
Guild.
I don't know what they call it. then, like... Okay, maybe he has like this cult following of Well, that maybe that's a little bit too on the nose. But
he has this group that follows him very closely and listens to every word.
Or maybe like they support him.
Yeah.
They don't at all. They don't. They're like the Seventh-day Adventists are like, we don't support anything that Ron Wyatt says. So even his own people reject his claims.
I love it. You just kind of like, no, guys, I found it all. Yeah. Like, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, Ron's got a story again. Let's, here comes let's let him share. Ron. But there are
he's
some.
He's the guy you avoid.
Yeah.
You're just like, someone's seeing me. Like, oh, he's walking this way.
There are some people, though, that with the Seventh-day Adventist church that, because some of the things that he says lines up with their eschatology, it's like, okay, we kind of believe this guy. Like, we kind of believe these things.
Okay.
And they run along with it. But nobody else does. It's just interesting.
That is very interesting.
Right? But I love the imagery.
Well, I love that, because at the same time, he could be right about some of those things.
Maybe. I mean, but the thing is like, a lot of that stuff was discovered around that time.
Yeah.
So, like, we do actually know where Sodom and Gomorrah was, because you have, like, there actually are, like, balls of, is it sulfuric acid?
Yeah.
It's like, you can actually find the, you can actually find these places, and they for sure, like,
That is what that is.
Like, modern archaeology has basically said, this is where this is.
Yeah.
And I think it's around the same time. So he's just like, yeah, me too.
Uh-huh. I said that.
Yeah. Now, the real Mount Sinai, that's an interesting one.
That's a very interesting one.
And then, but we've talked a little bit about Ark of the Covenant in Mount Ararat region and all this stuff. But, so anyways.
Or Noah's Ark, not the Ark of the Covenant.
Yes, you're right. You're correct.
Let me just different clarify ark. That.
What if the Ark of the Covenant was as big as Noah's Ark? Be pretty easy to find.
How did we miss that?
Oh, wait. We still haven't found Noah's Ark, though, so maybe not very easy
to
find.
Okay, not that easy.
But, yeah, so Ron Wyatt, like, God rest his soul. But I love the idea that, like, hey, the Ark of the Covenant is way down in this cave underneath Golgotha.
Yeah.
When Jesus died and his blood ran down through the cave system and fell onto the mercy seat.
Like, let's just say that that's true.
Okay.
My question is, like, how did it get there?
Yeah. Because the veil was torn.
And they just kind of forgot it?
No. They would have put it there.
Well, I mean, like, they put it there and they're just like, yeah, it's good.
Well, someone probably went down and was like, what's this blood doing on here? Like, they'll wipe it off.
Ew.
But
like, no one's there, like, guarding it. There's no booby trap set up.
Well, the blood would have just seeped
just, like,
in.
Put it there.
Oh, you mean when
like,
he
it's
found
just
it.
There. It's just like, there was no, like, over centuries, like, no one was guarding this area. Like, this is a sacred area. There's no, like, any kind of obstacle to get to it besides a little bit of a tight area.
They must have forgot it was there.
Like, how did they get it in there?
Yeah, I don't know. He held it for such a time as this.
Yeah.
So, to all the Ron Wyatt fans out there, we apologize. But kind of a cool idea.
Hey, you got to respect the hustle.
Interesting, to say the least. Yeah. But an episode coming on the Ark of the Covenant through biblical archaeology would be interesting.
And Mount Sinai.
And Mount Sinai.
Or Mount Ararat, I mean.
No, Mount Sinai.
Both.
Okay. 3, 2, 1.
We light the candles in catacombs. Whisper songs through radio tones. Whisper drifts where the thunder died. Truth still breathes on the other side. Gather hearts where the fire once burned. Song from saints that we've slowly learned. Through the smoke new flowers grow. Rooted deep in martyrs' row. We talk of grace and goals. Ones who love this world the most. Every name the wind will know. Carving light on martyrs' row. Is laughter under the gallows beam? Faith and fear both share the dream. Every doubt's a prayer half said. Every truth once left for dead. We're the choir that time forgot. Singing hymns where the fire's high. Turn the mic up and let it show. The saints still speak on Martyrs Row.
We talk of grace and ghosts. The ones who love this world the most. And every name the wind will know. Carved in light on Martyrs Row. Carved in light on Martyrs Row. Carved in light on Martyrs Row.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hey, Paul.
What's up?
Genesis 1, verses 1.
That's the beginning, isn't it?
In the beginning.
What?
God created the heavens and the earth. Mm. Verse 2. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the water. Paul, when did Satan fall? And why was it between Genesis 1:1 and Genesis 1:2? Oh, did I just answer the question?
Oops.
Uh-oh.
Oops.
Let's try that again.
Uh-oh.
Beep. Let me try that again. 1 John 3:8. Whoever makes a practice of sinning is of the devil, for the devil has been sinning from the beginning. The reason the Son of God appeared was to destroy the works of the devil. So, Paul, when did the devil first sin? Wait.
I think you just answered your own question.
Fall? When did the devil first fall? When did the fall of the devil occur? Devil fall?
Devil fall.
Fall devil.
Devil may cry?
Is the devil crying?
Is he crying?
Is he weeping? Is the devil weeping? Is the ancient serpent in a corner? Somewhere in the depths of the ocean, weeping?
Some sweaty eyes.
So, Paul, here's my question for you. After all of the questions I just asked, my question for you is, Paul, when did Satan fall?
This is amazing. You know, so we actually brought this concept up.
Oh, you're right. So what we need to actually do is we need to ask the question, not right now.
Yes.
But from last episode.
Exactly.
So let's ask the question.
So let's...
But, again...
Yeah.
We literally see the constellation Virgo...
Yes.
...above the constellation Scorpio.
Mm-hmm.
And it's as if the Virgin is crushing the head of the serpent.
Yes. And I think I mentioned this on a previous episode. That literally happened.
I know. We did.
At the birth of Christ.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you look up when did those constellations line up, it happened around the birth of Christ.
Yes.
So like that's actual signs literally in
that
the
literally
sky
happened.
That tell the story of what's actually happening on earth.
Yes. And Revelation paints that exact same picture.
Yeah.
But so like what's it talking about
in Genesis 3, then it talks about it in Revelation 12.
Yes. And so the kind of tease I want to pull out of here a little bit for a future episode is, so what the events that just happened here, that Revelation's talking about, happened then.
Yes.
And that's where the verse where we look at, okay, like he took a third of the stars with him.
Mm. So those things
that didn't
to be
happen
up,
in Genesis 3.
Potentially.
Well, as far as like how we're reading it here, it's like, he's talking about it right then.
So Paul, what you're saying is there's a potential that Genesis or Revelation 12 gives us insight, potentially, to when the angels fell and when Satan fell like lightning.
Yes.
Because Jesus says he saw it.
That's right.
So if
and
Jesus saw
it. Because of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's
we got
to
a lot
come.
We have a lot to talk about.
We do. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
3, 2, 1. All right. So, and what's the answer?
So quick answer. Just kidding. Wrong show.
Now you know Mike's super short show. Did you know that?
No, that's great though. I love that.
I think it's Nickelodeon, like back in the day.
That was it was really like really quippy.
He would go, and now you know Mike's super short show, and then maybe like. I don't know. Oh,
jazz.
That's Wayne's World.
Wayne's World.
So, Paul.
So, Satan, this guy. What?
When did he fall?
What is he up to?
Why is he fallen?
So, you know, it's funny. I actually, I asked a similar question.
Okay.
To a friend of mine recently.
Perfect. I love asking that question just to friends.
And he's he's a very traditional, you know, by traditional I mean mod norm.
Okay. Watch previous episode.
Yeah. Welcome back.
This whole episode is every 10 seconds. It's like
go back to the old show.
Yeah.
And so I asked him the question like
you asked your mod norm friend.
My non more
It's a hard one.
I asked my mod norm friend.
Yes.
And the question a very similar question, like, okay. Yeah, when did Satan fall? When do you think that happened?
Yeah, yeah.
And he was like, well, in the beginning. Like before everything happened. I was like, really? Hmm. He's like, yeah, and that's why the serpent then he could tempt everyone. I was like,
Yeah.
And you believe that.
And I'm guessing at the time, you did not.
I didn't.
And you may not now, but we may never know.
But we're gonna talk about it. Because it became like a very complex question.
Sure.
Because it's like when, and it's been like a thing for a while, it's like when someone says that, it's like, okay, but like where's that idea come from?
Exactly.
And that's really my question. Because it's like, okay, well let's, for the past like 15 years of my life.
Okay.
And that's not an exaggeration.
Okay.
Fortunately or unfortunately, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you're only 16 years old.
It's true. Thank you. I thank you.
Is that a compliment?
It's like you're not an adult.
Oh, yeah, I should have said 18. 16 was funnier, though.
It was pretty funny. It was good. And so I've spent like a lot of time just like looking at Genesis.
Yeah, yeah.
And especially the first few chapters.
Right.
Because it's like what's happening here?
Yeah. Well, we seem to keep going back to it.
There's a lot in there.
Yeah.
And the Old Testament in particular does a good job of condensing a lot of time in a few verses.
Yeah, for sure.
And it makes sense why.
Yeah, I guess.
Kind of. But also it's like, there's a lot going on in here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So even when we look at the serpent, which we'll come back to it again later.
Okay.
But it's like, okay, like, it doesn't say that he was evil
before. Yeah, sure.
So before he caused, or before he deceived the woman.
Yeah, at least it doesn't say that in Genesis 1 through 3.
Right. It's that idea isn't explicit.
Yeah.
And even throughout the rest of Scripture, nothing supports that idea.
Sure. Yeah. Kind of.
That it's like, it doesn't support the idea like, oh yeah, he was a fallen being.
Oh, right. I see what
before he deceived man and woman.
Right. Yes. Yes. Because we do get some descriptions of this particular being.
Yeah.
But you do get the like sly sideways statement of
yes.
Craftier than any other beasts in the field.
Right.
So, well, that doesn't necessarily mean like.
But it doesn't mean evil.
Yeah. Or does it?
And that's the thing. It's right. Like, I think we'd be inclined to say, yes, it does because of mod norm.
Right, because of where we are now. Because
how we're taught to read into it.
Right,
correct. But it's like, all right, let's like remove all of that.
Sure.
And let's just like, what does it say?
Yeah.
It's like, well, if you just read it for what it says, it seems to say something different. It's like they both fell at the same time.
Okay.
You know what I mean? In a sense.
Yeah, and by both you mean?
Like man and the serpent.
Got it.
It's like it kind of like they all get cursed at the same time.
Well, so that is an interesting piece. So in Genesis 3, when God curses them, he does it at the same time.
Right.
So you would assume that if that event, like if that event is the fall of man,
yeah,
is it also the fall of Satan?
Right.
And if and do we have indication that it's that they're different? Because in in the punishment, it all seems to be at the same degree.
Yes.
Although it is different punishment for different people.
Correct.
So, or different beings.
Yes. Yeah, fair enough.
But it doesn't necessarily say one was already evil.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily like, well, you know the serpent, the one that was already evil.
You know that bad guy?
Yeah, this is something else that God did to him.
Yes. So yeah, he just doubled down on this guy.
Right, or this was like a second offense.
Right, we don't get that language.
We don't.
So
we do kind of get the idea that there's some, I don't know, because the craftier idea is definitely one of those things where it's like he had an intent in the moment.
Yes.
But it feels more like temptation.
Exactly.
Than intention of sin.
Yes. So it's like he has, in when we look at that idea of like craftiness, it's like you have the ability to be a certain way.
Right.
But it doesn't mean you'll act on that thing.
Which asks a larger question.
Yeah.
That, and this is part of the reason why a cut and dry answer of, well, Satan was just born that way. Mm. Well, that brings up a whole other
list. That's a whole can of worms.
Because because then it's like, well, who bore him?
Right.
So does that mean that, so if he was born that way, which is not the suggestion of the individual you were talking to.
Right.
But if so, then God created him that way. And yeah. That's a whole other.
Which some people do believe that.
Well, it does fall a little bit in line with Job.
Yeah.
Where the Satan is an accuser.
Yeah.
But that's really like his day job.
Well, so that's we can talk a little bit about that right now.
Okay. Well, so the thing I was thinking, though, is in the craftier than any other beast of the field, in that idea, you kind of get this opportunity for temptation.
Yeah.
So it's really presenting to us, as far as like, if you're just reading the text, it's showing us that these individuals had the ability to fall or succumb to their temptation.
Yes.
Means that they had the ability to be tempted.
Yeah.
So that they were not infallible beings.
Correct.
So it's just an expression of their infallibility.
And I think like...
Or non-infallibility.
For like a quick like dive into that a little bit.
Sure.
Like, I think that's an example of... Same with man. It's like man wasn't born without the ability to sin.
Right.
And that's,
or was he?
Well, obviously not, because we did.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. And I think that's one of those examples like that's... God showing a love of, I want you to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And he allows his creation to make decisions.
Yes.
He doesn't make us infallible. If we were infallible, we would never have sinned.
Correct.
And so it's like he allows us to make the decision, are you going to choose me or not?
Right.
And we get to make that decision.
Which means that in the garden, in creation itself, pre-garden and in the garden, beings, created beings, seem to have the ability for choice, and to choose a way that is against or away from Yahweh's designed order, or Yahweh's preferred order.
What his plan is, or what his desired outcome is.
Yeah.
Because I think that's...
And I feel like plan is even kind of a messy thing.
Even with Job, like that's the idea that we get there. It's like God didn't create a world without the capacity for suffering.
Sure.
Like that wasn't part of his plan.
Right.
That wasn't part of what he created.
Yeah.
So that capacity was there. It doesn't mean that's what he wanted to happen.
Yeah.
But the ability for that to happen was there.
Yes.
And I think that's the same thing we see. It comes to the idea of God doesn't violate man's or being's free will.
Sure.
We see that amongst the angels. We see that amongst humans.
Yeah.
So it's like he doesn't violate those things.
Right.
And I think to elevate him in this is like God's too smart
to not have to do that.
Sure.
And it's like, yeah, when we start to kind of play these games of, oh yeah, he forced someone to do this, or he, you know, made someone do this, and it's like, well, now you're saying he has to cheat to get what he wants. It's like, he's too smart for that. He doesn't have to do that.
Well, and in some ways, why would the scripture be written the way it's written if that were the case?
Exactly.
Why wouldn't it be just that Moses is writing down the story of God created these people and then he caused them to fall away from him?
Right.
And then, like, why would it be so nuanced? Because that's not really, like, the Bible doesn't really give us those type of nuances.
Yeah.
Where we're trying to distinguish between good and evil.
Yeah.
It's telling us what is good and what is evil.
To what you just said, too, it's that it even goes to what Jesus himself says when he's casting out demons and they blame him of being a worker of Beelzebub.
Yes.
And he's like, well, a house divided can't stand.
Right.
And it's the same idea. If God created man to fall.
With the ability to fall.
Well, no. Like, just
the idea of God
creating
man.
It's like if God
man
created man
fall.
And the intent was, let me create man so they fall and then I can redeem them and I get more glory. It's like, that's a house divided.
Yeah,
you know,
particularly
Satan
if
can't cast out Satan.
Right, particularly if God creates a being and makes that being evil.
Yes.
In order to create that plan.
Yeah.
Right?
It's like, that's him working, that's the same, it's what Jesus calls out.
Yes.
In the Gospels of saying, you know, well, why was this man born, you know, lame? Is because of his father's sin or his own? It's like,
oh, right.
Neither.
Yeah.
He wasn't created this way.
Yes.
It's like that, it wasn't forced for him to be this way.
Right.
And so I think that goes back to the idea again in the beginning. It's like, God didn't create us to do that.
Mm.
He created us, but we had the capacity to do that.
Yeah.
He wanted us to choose.
Yeah. I mean, in that instance, though, the person was born that way.
Yeah.
And Jesus' response is, for this moment.
Yes.
For my glory.
Yeah. But so, he didn't make him that way.
Correct.
Yeah.
It was an allowance of that to be how the birthing process resulted.
Yes.
Which exists in a fallen space.
Correct.
So a corrupted world allows for that ability. But
yes,
the interesting thing about this, like kind of folding back in on the original thing, is something you may not consider or may not think about is the idea that non-humans have the ability of free will. They do or they don't have the concept of free will. Because again, why would we, it would make Yahweh the most craftiest beast of the field,
right?
Or the most craftiest being, in that he's creating the narrative in such a way that would lead us in a deception.
Correct.
Because otherwise it would just be saying, God created this, he created this person for this, he created this for that. Like, that is actually what the Bible's telling us, is telling us what is good and what's evil.
Yeah.
And so for him to conceal how he created things specifically in such a way that is fully sovereign, in a, everything is laid out exactly how it's supposed to be, but I'm going to conceal that I was Oz.
Mm.
And I'm the puppet master, and I'm going to tell you that I'm good, and everything that I do is good, and that I am the definition of good, but I'm not going to tell you that I was actually the one that orchestrated all this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a craftiness there that doesn't seem to be consistent with the character of God in the way that the Bible's written.
Yeah, correct.
So that is a tricky thing, because and, I feel like that is the line where people go, well, God is evil. Can you imagine all of this? It's like, why would he create all of this?
Right.
Well, I think in order for you to believe that, you would have to believe that the Bible is a deception given to us by God.
Right.
Which I think people do believe that.
Some people believe that, yeah.
Which you would have to come all the way to this conclusion and get to it from where we just got to it.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting in the sense that, like, how do you argue out of that?
And I think some of that comes to a poor understanding of sovereignty. And like, what does God know or control?
Sure.
And I think that's the
at least for me, in like a short side of this, is like my approach to this and how I've approached it going through scripture is, you know, so God is not subject to anything. And that means like, oh, logic exists.
Yeah.
But God isn't subject to logic.
Sure.
But everything he does is logical.
Sure.
It's like he's not subject to knowledge. He knows more than what is capable of being known.
Yes. So
it's like there's these limitations. There's no limitation to it. It's like the limitation of the idea, the concept that we have.
Yeah.
He knows more than it.
Right.
And it's like, well, how is that possible?
The complexity is infinite.
Yeah. And so with that, it's like, and we see moments of this throughout, especially in like Kings and Samuels, in those books, where God, he allows for other things to make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And he even shows, he's like, hey, I know possibilities that won't happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And we see that with David specifically.
Yes.
Where David's like, okay, what happens if I go down here? He's like, oh, if you do this, that's going to happen. But if you don't do that, then this will happen.
Yeah.
And then David makes one decision.
Yeah.
And the other thing doesn't happen.
Right.
So it's like God knows everything that could happen.
Right.
And so with that, it's like,
he's a chess player.
Yeah, that's exactly the idea there. Yeah, it's like, he's kind of playing chess with everyone at the same time all at once.
Yes.
And it's like, so God, since he knows more than's capable of being known, he knows how to get what he wants. Mm-hmm. So he's like, hey, I want the story of Jesus to happen.
Sure.
And it will happen.
Sure.
Now, how it happens, maybe some of it's a little bit different than maybe he wanted. It's like, I called someone to do this, but they failed.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I called someone else to replace them. Mm. I mean, we even see that with like Elijah.
But in the sense that like God is not playing a chessboard where the people have to be moved by his hand.
No, they're making their own moves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he's going, okay, well now I have to adjust.
Yeah.
So we're playing.
And that
him.
doesn't diminish his ability at all.
Right.
But it's showing he doesn't violate free will.
Yes.
He doesn't violate
or at least
his intent for us to make decisions.
Yes, or at least what the Bible is showing us is consistency in the action of God.
Correct.
Which again, depending on how you read the scriptures, people would say, well, he seems to actually be different from here to there.
Mm.
And you go, okay, let's read it again and find the consistency of where things actually do line up and repeat and themes over and over again, where there are themes like be fruitful and multiply that show up all the way through.
Yeah.
There are themes like...
we've been talking about the promise of Abraham.
Yes, exactly.
Like that's consistent from beginning to end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then even themes like the theme of I don't wish for sacrifice, but for obedience.
Yeah.
I prefer obedience over sacrifice. What I want is obedience, not sacrifice.
Yeah.
We see that in the Old and the New Testament. It's consistent throughout. It's like what God wants is relationship with us.
Correct. Yeah.
And that's the beginning.
Yeah.
And then he goes, you guys keep choosing not me.
Yeah.
And so he...
And I've made everywhere for you to be able to choose me.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, please... If you don't choose me, unfortunately, there's a place that I've made for those who rebelled against me.
Correct. Yeah.
Who you'll have to join them. Please don't do that.
I don't want you to do that.
No. And I and to be consistent, my love also has judgment because that is what creates consistency in love.
Yeah.
Is that there is correct judgment of what is right and what is wrong and what will hurt you and what won't.
Yeah.
Which gets back to the which this would be a whole other question, but it's really going back, and maybe we can reset to this spot, is do other created beings have the ability to sin against God?
Mm.
And I think this is giving us an example of that. If we read it this way, if we talk about it this way, where the ancient serpent had the ability to fall into temptation and actually... bear fruit in sin.
Yeah.
And the thing that I think is interesting that I don't think I've thought about until the last like couple of years really is the idea that spiritual beings are already in their eternal state.
Yeah.
So what that means is non-human beings, beings created by God, are actively living outside of our timeline, and they exist in eternity. So they are in existence in eternity.
Yeah.
Which means that the extension of God's grace is limited because they are not on a timeline. But because humanity is on a timeline, he can create an endpoint where people have can experience the grace of God over a period of time to eventually learn and receive salvation.
Yes.
And choose him, even though their life shows that they didn't choose him until the point of receiving him.
Well, and the proof text to that is, I believe it's the end of Genesis 3, where it says, let's kick them out of the garden.
Yes.
So that way they can't have access to the tree of life and live forever.
Yes.
And it's like, well, which is an why act does of grace. He say that? It's like, that's his grace and mercy.
Yes.
Saying that if you can't die,
yes,
I can't redeem you.
Correct.
I can't show you grace if you can't die.
Right.
And so by him allowing it so we can't regain immortality, he's allowing us the opportunity to be redeemed to him.
Yeah, which then you get like early church fathers like Origen, who taught universalism, and he even believes so far as the grace of God would extend to the devil and his angels, that at some point all of created things would be redeemed back to the glory of God. But that's inconsistent with...
That's not what Jesus himself says.
Correct.
Yeah.
So it's inconsistent with biblical theology. Like, correct. And that's why the councils called him a heretic.
Yeah.
But...
I get it.
But because the text itself bears witness to the opposite of that idea. But I think that that is the simplicity of it. It's the idea that if a being is eternal, it is already in the state it's going to be in.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it has the inability to sin against God.
Right.
But it does have the inability to receive salvation from God.
Yeah.
Because there is no timeline for it to stop sinning.
Yes.
Once it has sinned, it has made its choice.
Yeah.
But for humanity...
Yeah, that makes sense.
Closing the garden, or closing the entry point for which man could then enter heaven again, where sinful cannot enter the presence of God.
Right.
It can't happen.
Yeah.
Because in some ways, if we tried to do that, it would destroy us.
Yes.
In the process. It'd be like walking into a laser beam or something.
Yeah. I mean, it's like you get purified, which means you don't exist anymore.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. So that idea is kind of interesting. I thought about that in the sense that like the fact that we have time bears witness to the grace of God.
Yes. Absolutely.
Because the time we have allows us the opportunity to sort through our shortcomings.
Yeah.
And to find Jesus and accept him.
And I think that's why the verse in Ephesians is so important, where it's like, we do not battle against flesh and blood.
Yes.
But powers and principalities. It's like...
Chapter 6, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, that's the big thing. It's like, we, from the moment someone's born to the moment they die, they have the ability to be redeemed.
Yes.
But supernatural beings don't have that.
Correct.
And so, we're not
fighting...
But
they do have the ability to fall.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so when did...
So when did Satan fall, Paul?
Yeah. And
did Satan fall?
Paul. actually, could you pull your Bible app out?
I can.
This episode, by the way...
Brought to you by...
It's unsponsored, but it should be sponsored.
Brought to you by Bible.com.
Revelation 12.
You don't want to touch my phone?
Icky germs.
Okay, Revelation 12.
And so we read this on our last episode.
We did.
And I kind of want to use this as our
proof
jumping
text.
Point.
Okay.
Yeah. Kind of our starting point.
Love it.
And so I'll start here. This is in verse 1.
We're in the middle now.
We are definitely in the middle, which we've talked about a lot, which I think is a great setup.
It is,
that helps what we're going to say.
Yeah, and I think it answers a lot of things that people would be like, but what about this?
Yeah.
Or it makes you go... I'm lost now. Can you reset?
That's fair.
So, reset. So, Paul, when did Satan fall?
I'm glad you asked. So, Revelation 12, starting in verse 1.
Okay.
And a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. She was pregnant and was crying out in birth pains and the agony of giving birth. And another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great red dragon,
with the seven heads and 10 horns, on his head's 7 diadems. His tail swept down a third of the stars of heaven and cast them to the earth, and the dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth, so that when she bore her child, he might devour it. She gave birth to a male child, one who is to rule all the nations with a rod of iron, but her child was caught up to God and to his throne, and the woman fled into the wilderness, where she has a place prepared by God, in which she is to be nourished for 1,260 days. So, we read that on the last episode.
Yes.
And a quick thing, it's like, okay, what are they talking about? It's like,
sure.
Well, that's the birth of Jesus.
It is, yes.
And so we see all these events happening then.
Yeah, yeah.
So now it continues.
Okay.
And says, now...
Go for it.
War arose in heaven. When did war arise in heaven?
Now.
At the birth of the Messiah. Now.
Okay.
It was like right then when that was happening.
Okay, interesting, yeah.
Michael and his angels fighting against the dragon. And the dragon and his angels fought back. But he was defeated, and there was no longer any place for them in heaven. And the great dragon was thrown down, that ancient serpent who is called the devil and Satan, the deceiver of the whole world. He was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. Okay.
Okay.
So that's telling us, right, like, just to take that alone, it's like, well, it's saying that he was cast down at the birth of Jesus, at the incarnation of Christ.
That there was a war in heaven in that moment.
Yeah, and it's like, that's when the dragon was thrown down, that ancient serpent who is called the devil and Satan. But it's like, wait, hold on a second. Hmm. If that's when he was cast down,
sure,
at the incarnation,
yeah,
who are these other guys?
Okay.
What's going on here? Because obviously someone's been deceiving the whole world.
Sure.
So then it's like, well, it raises the question, was he allowed access into heaven?
Mm. But you're saying this is a second moment?
Maybe. But it's okay. Like, well, let's say it's like, okay, let's say he was fallen, but he was still allowed access into heaven.
Okay.
But wait, you just said it yourself. How is evil allowed in the presence of the Lord?
Mm. Okay.
So how can an evil being be in heaven and then cast down later?
Sure.
So what's happening there? You know what I mean? So
I do.
I'm asking the question. I'm not answering it. So what I want to do is, let's put a pin right there.
Okay. Okay.
And I'm going to jump.
That is leaving a little bit of context out of going in and out of that chapter.
Yeah. And so it's like, okay, you're wondering how we got here.
Yeah, yeah. You'd have to be reading Revelation in a specific way.
Yes. Yeah. And so, there are things here around even just this alone. And one of them is, you know, Luke 10:17-20.
Okay.
Which is, Jesus says, I saw Satan fall like lightning. And then later he says, I have given you authority to tread on serpents.
Yes.
But it's like, wait, that's happening then. Because the 72 apostles disciples that he sent out, they come back like, whoa, we've got some power over... I should just read it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll just read... I'm saying this like, wait, I can just read this.
You can, but that does make sense. You have to unselect it.
That's crazy. Hey, Bible app.
That's crazy.
I'm too dumb to use your app.
But sponsor us.
Yeah, please.
Luke 10?
Yes, starting in verse 17.
Okay.
The return of the 72.
Ooh.
The 72 returned with joy, saying, Lord, even the demons are subject to us in your name. And he said to them, I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven. Behold, I have given you authority to tread on serpents and scorpions, and over all the power of the enemy, and nothing shall hurt you. Nevertheless, do not rejoice in this, that the spirits are subject to you, but rejoice that your names are written in heaven.
Mm, yeah.
And so, like, with this, in context to Revelation 12, it's like, he's talking about, like, it all happened, like, pretty recent.
Okay, interesting.
It's like,
he also says, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven.
Yes. Yeah.
So.
But it's interesting, because it's like, we don't see this language in, like, these ideas of, like, these exorcisms. And, like, the fact they come back and say, hey, they're subject to us.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
This is novel.
Right.
This doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So what's happening?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I saw Satan fall. I saw him cast out.
I see what you're saying.
So now you have, now I've, essentially what you're saying is I've overcome his authority. Mm. I've reclaimed the spiritual space.
Got it.
And now you have authority.
Okay, I see what you're setting up.
But it's
that's
like,
interesting.
Oh, wait, but this is all happening then.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
This isn't Genesis 3. This isn't before Genesis 1.
Correct.
This is happening in Luke 10. Mm. What?
Okay.
But what about the serpent?
What about, yeah.
So,
This is interesting, Paul.
Oh, thank you.
Because I honestly don't, I'm not sure where you're going to go.
Me either. And honestly, even with that idea, there's a lot of other verses too we could jump into.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, yeah.
I'm gonna stick with that because I feel like that makes the point pretty clear.
Do it. Yeah, do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so this is a long section, but I want to bring up Isaiah 14,
okay.
3 through 23.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of wrote
pieces
kind
of
highlights of it.
Okay.
Because it's 20 verses.
Right,
so
right, right.
It's a lot to read.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're already like 30 minutes into this. So in my highlights moment, quoting it is, when the Lord has given you rest from your pain and turmoil, and this is talking about them with Babylon.
Okay.
That's like the immediate context of it.
Yeah.
What's interesting, even with that first part, when the Lord has given you rest from your pain and turmoil.
Sure.
So it hasn't happened yet.
Right.
But yeah. When it happens.
And this is in Isaiah.
This is Isaiah.
Right.
Take up this taunt. Mm. So he's saying, hey, this hasn't happened yet, but when it does happen,
yeah.
Do this.
Yes.
So it's like, okay, so it's future language.
Yes.
The Lord has broken the staff of the wicked that ruled the nations in anger. How are you fall? Yeah, how you are fallen from heaven. You made the nation. You who made the nations low.
Mm.
So those are from a lot of different verses I kind of pulled together.
Right.
So it's like, but okay, that's like the story of the taunt here that we're seeing.
Yes.
Is he saying, hey, this rest hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
But it will happen.
Yeah.
And when it does, you're going to taunt this guy.
Yeah.
And we're talking about this being, and a lot of people, there's some debate on here, but I feel like fairly consistently, a lot of people are saying this points to a Satan figure.
Yeah.
As sure. Well as the immediate Babylon.
Right.
It's like, you have judged the nations unrighteously,
mm.
And you will be made low.
Yeah.
Once the Lord has victory.
Yeah, and this is in Isaiah when the two pieces of Israel have split, the two kingdoms.
Yes.
This is during the two kingdoms, and the Lord is saying, one of you has followed me better than the other.
Yeah.
And it's because of Babylon's corruption.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then in verse 12... Yeah. I'll actually read some of this.
Yeah, please,
section.
Please.
So verse 12, Isaiah 14, how you are fallen from heaven, O day star, son of dawn, how you are cut down to the ground, you who laid the nations low. You said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven above the stars of God. I will set my throne on high. I will sit on the mount of assembly in the far reaches of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will make myself like the Most High. But you are brought down to Sheol, to the far reaches of the pit. Those who see you will stare at you and ponder over you. Is this the man who made the earth tremble, who shook kingdoms, who made the world like a desert and overthrew its cities, who did not let its prisoners go home? All the kings of the nations lie in glory, each in his own tomb, but you are cast out away from your grave, like a loathed branch, clothed with the slain, those pierced by the sword, who go down to the stones of the pit, like a dead body trampled underfoot. You will not be joined with them in burial, because you have destroyed your land. You have slain your people. May the offspring of evildoers never more be named. Prepare slaughter for his sons because of the guilt of their fathers, lest they rise and possess the earth and fill the face of the world with cities. So you will be cast down so that you cannot
yes.
Be fruitful and multiply in your sin.
Yes.
Which is crazy.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And so what's interesting with this too, because especially in Old Testament, in the ancient Near East.
Yes.
you had kings who ruled cities.
Yeah.
And these kings across all of those cultures
yeah.
were viewed as not just human.
Right.
But they were viewed as part human, part divine.
Yes.
And they were kind of these bridges between the divine world, the gods, and humans.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what allowed them to rule, because they could commune with both.
Yes.
And actually, we see this pretty explicitly in the Epic of Gilgamesh.
Okay.
Where Gilgamesh is described as two-thirds divine, one-third human.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And it's like, oh, well, where does that idea come from?
Sure.
And so in Mesopotamian cosmology.
Okay.
Good old Mesopotamia.
Yeah.
Many gods existed in triads. You have Anu, which represented heaven.
Okay.
Enlil, which represented the air. And Enki, which represented the water.
Yeah.
And so two-thirds divine is an incomplete divinity.
Mm.
But allows him, Gilgamesh, to be the bridge.
Okay.
So he's not whole.
Yeah.
Which is that, that's the, a lot of ancient Near East, they love numbers for symbols.
Right.
And three represents completeness or wholeness.
Gotcha.
Which is kind of cool why the Trinity is three.
Yeah.
But anyway, side point. So with that, it's like we see that same picture of three, but he's not three out of three God. He's two out of three.
Yes.
And so the part that he lacks is immortality.
Got it.
So this king, he is able to enter the divine realm.
Yes.
And commune with the gods, and mm-hmm. he's able to be on earth and rule the humans.
Yeah, so he has enough in his nature to be both enough divine and enough human to access both realms.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that's where, with Isaiah, it's like, I think that's why we can see kind of it describing two different things.
Mm, okay.
It's that blending of language where it's like, yeah, I'm talking about a human,
yes.
talking about a city, Babylon, yes. a real place.
Yes.
And I'm also talking about a supernatural place or supernatural being.
Sure.
And we see that again in Ezekiel 28.
Yeah, yeah.
We're talking about the king of Tyre and the prince of Tyre.
Yes.
And it's talking about the same thing, but with two different beings.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, because there's a link there.
Yes. And it could also be that the literary usage of this here is, and I don't know precisely if this is what it is, but I think this is, maybe this can reconcile some people bringing this together.
Yeah, fair.
But it's the idea that, like, okay, what if we're, in a literary sense, what if we read that idea from what you're saying, but go, okay, this is, essentially, the idea similar to that Sheol, the depths of Sheol, or what am I thinking of? What's the place that they go to? Tartarus.
Yes. Yeah.
That Tartarus is made for the devil and his angels. That when that is mentioned, that's not a place that we are supposed to go.
Yeah.
So
are you thinking of the Lake of Fire? That's the end place, but
yeah.
Well, even yeah.
Oh yeah, yes.
Because
yes,
Tartarus, we don't go there.
Correct. Yeah. Sorry, yes. Yes, Lake of Fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, so none of that stuff was, like, we weren't supposed to go there.
Right.
But in this sense, when we get the Isaiah passage, and then we also get the Ezekiel 28 passage,
yeah.
and we get this concept that maybe consider it this way, in a literary form, it is a narrative and a story all happening at once, where it's yeah. saying, like, what did happen to Satan will happen to you.
Yes.
It can be both things. So
yes.
in a literary sense, maybe we are getting actual descriptors of what actually happened to Satan, past
yeah.
tense, and the Lord is relating it to what will happen to this natural leader,
yeah.
present tense.
Yes.
There is a possibility of that reading.
Absolutely.
And so that's what I would say. I think we can consider that, and that would put us in a place where it does happen before this moment.
Mm.
Or we can read it in the sense of, this is a direct commentary on what did happen to the being, and God is speaking past the human into the
yeah.
ruler of that human in
yeah.
the moment, which
yeah.
I think is what you're suggesting.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think it's important to consider both, which is what we're
Absolutely.
Talking about.
Yeah.
So there's a potential that God is speaking past the human ruler.
Yes.
And in this, in the Isaiah instance, mm-hmm. he's talking about the king of Babylon.
Yes.
But he's telling them what they can say.
When something happens.
When something happens.
Yes.
And so it's this idea that, like, hey, maybe what he's saying is you can taunt him by telling him that what happened to the devil will happen to him.
Yeah.
Or who you're actually taunting, Ephesians 6, is the ruler of the air in the moment.
Yes.
So it could be one or the other.
Yes.
And that's an interesting idea.
And part of me, it's like, again, going with consistency, and what do we? How does this line up with the consistency of Scripture and the yeah. character of God?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, it seems like it's probably the other.
It could be.
Because it's like, this is like Paul speaking.
Yeah, yeah.
the human right here in front of you, not the
no,
apostle.
Yeah, sure.
And it's the idea of like, well, if we believe the Scripture is true when it says we do not battle against flesh and blood.
Right.
It's like, okay, so that's not who we're fighting.
Right.
But we see him calling out an actual human leader.
Yes.
So it's like, okay, so are we battling against flesh and blood?
Mm.
It's like, no, powers and principalities.
Sure.
But now, here's a natural thing that you can physically touch,
mm-hmm.
and I'm speaking into a spiritual space through that.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think that's consistent with the usage of poetic and prophetic language.
Yeah.
It's these like layers that go into everything.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I'm saying this thing you can actually like get the immediate gratification of.
Right.
Same thing with the promise to Abraham. It's like, hey, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And now here's an immediate benefit to prove that I'm true to my word.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, here's what's going to happen.
Sure.
Or maybe even here's what's happening.
Right.
And here's an immediate thing you can touch to recognize what I'm saying.
Well, and a witness to that is the beginning of what I read in Isaiah 14:12.
Mm.
It addresses them as, oh, day star.
Yes.
It addresses them as the spiritual being,
mm-hmm.
not as the human ruler.
Yeah.
Which is the same thing we see in Ezekiel 28.
Right.
Where it shifts between we're talking to the king and then we're talking to the prince.
Yeah.
And one of them is human and one of them is
not. One of them is a cherub.
Yes.
As he calls him.
Who apparently walked on the mountain of God.
In the garden.
Yes.
It's like, what?
Yeah. The most interesting thing about that to me is considering what the garden looked like.
Yeah.
Which we did a whole episode on that.
We did.
So, yeah, go back and watch that, because that is a major thing to consider. It's like,
yeah,
if we read Ezekiel 28 and we go, okay, even if we go with the thing I just proposed, let's say Ezekiel 28 is talking about you're going to be like this guy. Well, this guy is a spiritual being that it says did what? It was a guardian cherub walking on the mountain of God in the Garden of Eden. Okay, so that's not a metaphor. That's who he's referring to. He's either talking to him in the moment, or he's talking to the guy and saying that you will be like this guardian cherub who once walked on the mountain of God. Either way, it's a descriptor of what happened in the garden.
Yes.
Which is, I don't know how we read that and go, oh, they're just making up stories.
Because
that would be the only explanation.
Right.
The only explanation of the detail of an Ezekiel 28 is that someone is just making up a story of like it's a parable.
Right.
Like there's farmers in the field.
Yeah.
That's not what's happening.
Yeah.
But even in that instance, the parable, there are actually farmers in the field who sow seeds.
Sure.
Like that's a real thing that happens.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting thing. Even with looking at the ministry of Jesus.
Yes.
He was known for telling parables.
He was.
But he was also known for not telling parables, too.
Also that.
And we see both things.
Yes.
And the reason I say it that way is because he tells a story about Lazarus and Sheol, Lazarus,
yeah.
which is not the one he raised from the dead, a different Lazarus.
Correct.
In the rich man. And it's not a parable.
No.
So it's like, wait, then what's he talking about? He's talking about real things.
Yes.
And because even when he says, he's like, there's no preface. It's like, this is a parable. You know, like, but it's like, none of that.
Yeah.
He's saying, this is a real thing.
Yeah. Yeah, because a parable is, like, simply put, a parable is a story alongside reality.
Yes.
So that's literally what the word breaks down to mean. So what happens is Jesus is literally doing something in the moment. He's preaching that the kingdom of God is here and it's now and it's right in front of you.
Yeah.
And the people are going, wait, what's going on? And he goes, it's kind of like this, right?
Yeah.
And then he goes into a parable. And then what do the disciples do? Mm. Especially like Matthew 13 is a great example. Yeah, because the disciples go, well, like the wheat and the weeds, right?
Mm.
And he explains like the wheat, the farmer plants the wheat, and the next day someone came through the night and put weeds in, and then they woke up and the workers are like, huh, what's going on? Did you also plant weeds? And he was like, no, I just planted wheat.
Yeah.
He's like, weird. Do you want us to go get the weeds out? No, because you'll take the wheat up.
Yeah.
He's like, all right, so just leave it, let it grow together, and at the harvest, we'll sort it out.
Yeah.
And then after that, in Matthew 13, the disciples go, hey, by the way, what's going on with the wheat and the weeds? And Jesus goes, oh, yeah, okay, so the wheat are the sons of, are the good guys. The wheat are the ones who follow after God. Mm-hmm. And then the wheat are the sons of the evil
weeds.
One.
Yeah.
The weeds are the sons of the evil one. And the person who sows the weeds is the evil one.
Yeah.
Satan himself. And the workers are you guys. And then the reapers who will come and reap are the angels.
Mm.
And then the farmer is God.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh.
Huh.
So that is consistent throughout the Bible.
Yes.
If you look at the Old Testament prophets and you see these visions of heaven, and what happens is they go, or the Lord says something, and he says something in a very descriptive manner. He's not just making up a story. He's referring to something.
Yes.
So that reference is not something we can just throw away.
Right.
It's something we should consider.
Yeah.
That shapes the rest of what's happening.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so with that being said,
yeah,
I want to jump. I love jumping.
Let's jump.
To Genesis 3.
Do we pull it up?
1 and 14 specifically. But yeah, let's... Genesis 3, 1, you've already mentioned, but it's worth saying again. It says, now the serpent was more crafty than any other beast of the field that the Lord had made.
Mm.
But then if we jump to verse 14...
Oh, I did mention that.
You did, yeah. And we jump to verse 14 here. It says, this is after he has deceived the man and the woman.
Mm.
The Lord God said to the serpent, because you have done this, cursed are you above all livestock and above all beasts of the field. On your belly you shall go, and dust you shall eat all the days of your life. So let's just pause there.
Okay.
Because we actually talked about something like more on the front end of this section, which was it doesn't say that, in the beginning he was evil.
Oh, right.
Or in like Genesis 3, like, by the way, there's this really evil guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This really evil being, the serpent, who's just like in the garden now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, wait, no, we don't get that.
Yeah.
We just say he's crafty.
Sure.
He's a lawyer.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And then he does something, and God's response is, because you've done that. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, you're going to get cursed because you did that. He doesn't say like, hey, you're already cursed and here's another one. Or you're evil and now here's a curse. He's like, no, because of your actions,
right?
Now you're getting a curse.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's like, okay, so that's like happening then.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, okay, so what's his curse?
Yeah.
It's like, well, okay, so, I mean... helps that he's cursed above all livestock.
Oof.
And it's like, okay, so like you are the worst of the worst. But it says,
and the worst of the best.
And that's true. Fair enough. But so
I'm going to ask this question to answer this other question that's about to pop up.
Okay.
And the question I'm going to ask to this is, so where did the serpent go? Because we know with the man and the woman, Adam and Eve, they got cast out of the garden. They got kicked out of the garden.
Yes.
And there is cherubs surrounding it, set up at the openings.
The gates.
The gates.
Right.
But it doesn't say anything more about the serpent after his curse.
That's true.
It stops talking about him.
Yeah, yeah.
And so my question is, like, where did he go?
Yeah.
Did he stay in the garden? Did he get kicked out with them?
Good question.
Well, we actually have a little bit of insight into here.
Okay.
And so...
let's get into here.
Get into here.
We have a little bit of insight into here.
I don't know why I talk this way.
I like it. Makes it more interesting.
Yeah, that's fair. So there's one phrase in particular.
Okay.
And it's, dust you shall eat.
Ooh.
This has been... I make fun of Answers in Genesis a lot sometimes.
You make fun of what?
The ministry answers in Genesis.
Ministry answers in Genesis.
Answers in Genesis?
Answers in Genesis. What is this?
You don't know that with Ken Ham?
No.
You know what that is. they're the ones that have like the Ark in Kentucky.
I know who Ken Ham is.
Yeah. That's his ministry, Answers in Genesis.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. You also said it so fast, I didn't even know what you said.
That's, I guess I'm just so used to everyone knowing what it is. That's fair.
Okay.
Sorry to assume.
Ken Ham.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've picked on them a few times.
Okay.
And one of them is...
well, they make a lot of glaring declarations.
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They kind of leave themselves open to... yeah.
To some pokes.
Yeah.
And so with this one, they do a whole thing about like, oh, serpents actually do, or snakes actually do eat dirt and all this and that. But it's like... not really. Like, they don't eat dirt.
Well, they probably get a little in their mouth.
They talk like, oh, when they're like, you know, tasting stuff with their tongue.
Yeah.
Like, burp, 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 like, they get a little bit of dirt. So, like, yeah, they're kind of like eating it. It's like, you're really stretching that.
Yeah, that's not.
You're really stretching that point.
They're not intentionally eating dirt.
No. So, for me, it's like, well, how about we just look into the culture in the language?
Yes.
Like, well, what did they think that meant?
Yeah, let's do it.
And so that phrase is actually a Hebrew idiom.
Okay.
That's tied to defeat and Sheol.
Mm. Okay, interesting.
And it's like, okay, well, Paul, where do you get that from?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, well, actually, we see this in a lot of different places throughout Scripture.
Okay.
And I'm going to try to pull up a few of them quickly.
Perfect. You can tell them to me and I'll do it.
Oh, that'd be awesome, actually. Yeah. You're much quicker, probably. So the first one, this is in the category of the idea of defeat.
Okay.
So Micah 7:17.
Micah. Way back there.
Yeah, he's one of the minor guys.
7:17.
Not like in the coal mines.
So I'll start in 16. The nations shall see and be ashamed of all their might. They shall lay their hands on their mouths. Their ears shall be deaf. They shall lick the dust like a serpent, like the crawling things of the earth.
So that's like pretty direct tie-in.
Yeah.
And then let's jump
in. It's also interesting that it says, their ears shall be deaf.
Yeah.
Which, what does Jesus say in Matthew 13?
Mm.
Those who have ears to hear, let them hear.
Yeah.
He says it over and over
that's
again.
That's so true.
Yeah.
I never picked that up. That's really good.
Thanks.
I like that.
I didn't write it.
Isaiah 49:23.
Okay.
Yeah, but you quoted it well.
That's true. Thanks. I'll take that.
I love it.
49:23.
Yes.
Kings shall be your foster fathers, and their queens your nursing mothers. With their faces to the ground, they shall bow down to you and lick the dust of your feet.
So again, like, and the next one is Psalm 72:9. So it's like this very clear picture. And even Micah ties it directly back to the garden in Genesis 3. And it's the idea of like, yeah, you're like defeat. You're laid low. You're down below everyone else.
Psalm 72:9, may desert tribes bow down before him and his enemies lick the dust.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's like, okay, we're seeing that. I got a few more for you on the Sheol side.
Let's do it.
So like we see this idea. It's like it's tied to this. This idiom is used to be like, you are so below everybody.
Yeah.
You have to literally lick their dirt.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
In Genesis 3:19.
Okay.
We're not even going that. We're not even going that far out of Genesis here.
No.
Out of when it was said that he shall eat dirt.
Genesis 3:19. By the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, for you are dust, and to dust you shall return.
And then jump into Psalm 22:15. So it's like this idea. It's like, okay, so you came from dust. And you're going to return to dust. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, that's death.
Oh, yeah.
That's what he's talking about.
Yeah. Psalm 22:15. My strength is dried up like a potsherd, and my tongue sticks to my jaw. You lay me in the dust of death.
And then Job 7:21. So there we get it, even a clearer picture of it. The dust of death. It's like, well, he's tying it directly to death.
Yeah. Job 7:21.
Yes.
Why do you not pardon my transgression and take away my iniquity? For now I shall lie in the earth. You will seek me, but I shall not be.
There we are. So it's like when we see this the way this phrase, you shall eat dust.
Yeah.
It's tied to these concepts of you are below everything. You are defeated.
Yes.
You are humbled below everybody else.
Yeah.
But also, you are to die.
Yeah.
And death is Sheol.
Yes.
That's the underworld.
Yes.
So he's saying, like, you are subject to Sheol, and you're subject to defeat.
Mm.
There's no redemption for you.
Yeah.
And so where does the serpent go? He goes to Sheol.
He dies.
He dies.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, okay, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, considering that, because the curse upon the man and the woman are that their job here on earth will continue, but it will be much, much harder.
Yes.
But to the serpent, he will be dead.
Yeah. Yes.
He will die.
Like, you are done.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the serpent is not a biological snake.
Right.
The serpent is a guardian cherub.
Correct.
According to Ezekiel 28.
Yes.
And
I think we've talked about this on an episode as well, the Nakash, that word, which is the word we see there for serpent.
Is that Psalm 82?
This is Genesis 3.
Okay.
Yeah.
No. I'm talking about, oh, the Nakash.
Yeah.
In Genesis 3. Gotcha.
Yeah. That word serpent is kind of like this, like, triple entendre.
Right.
To refer to many different things.
Yes.
But
also,
but it points to the idea of this isn't a snake.
Right.
So
I mean that helps, because the idea that dust is death, and that you, like, meaning if we go, all right, the serpent is not an eternal being, but instead has somehow taken the form of a biological snake, then that eternal being now is trapped in the snake and forced to roam the earth.
Mm.
So now we have to reconcile with the fact that Satan is actually just roaming the earth in a biological snake.
He's slithering around.
Yeah. If we're going to follow that out.
Right.
You know what
I mean? That's true. Yeah, that's true.
But if we're not going to follow that out, because the rest of scripture talks about the ancient serpent.
Yeah.
The Satan, that's Revelation 12.
Mm-hmm.
So if we see that, and then we look at Ezekiel 28, we look at Isaiah 14, we look at all of these different passages that refer to the devil himself, then, well, even when we look at the temptation of Jesus, it's like, well, that wasn't a biological snake in the wilderness being like,
right.
Hey, Jesus, you know what I
mean? Down to me. What? Yeah. I'm just going to step on your head.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's not what's happening. So I think we
right.
have some understanding that, like, okay, yeah, this being took on the form of a snake and then spoke. It's like, all right,
possibly.
You're making a lot of leaps.
Yeah.
Right? And you're making a lot of leaps that don't have logical conclusion.
Yes.
Because if that's the leap you're going to make, then at least be consistent with it.
Right.
That if that's your leap, then the consistency of that leap means that now either all snakes now have to live on the ground, but then where does Satan go?
Yeah.
It still doesn't answer the question of where does Satan go?
Yeah.
So that's one of those things where it's like, all right, well, they Adam and Eve have to continue what they're doing, but now it's going to be hard for them.
Yes.
The Satan, the ancient serpent, now is cast down.
Yes.
Which is to dust.
Correct.
Right? But the serpent is not made from dust.
Right.
Yeah.
And
interesting,
so,
Paul.
But it's kind of these, like, let's just take it from a level of, like, fallenness.
Yes, okay.
And so it's like, okay, so we see the serpent falling in Genesis 3.
Mm-hmm.
We see the dragon falling in Revelation 12.
Yes.
These are two very distinct and very separated events.
Yes.
So it's like, okay, so are there two falls?
Hmm. Interesting.
How can the same being fall twice? Well, that's an interesting question.
It is an interesting question.
But then, I'm actually going to skip that one for today. But okay. I was like, we could go a whole
is
different
this a
direction.
Part two?
This is probably a part two at some point.
Yeah. Okay.
But so jumping back to Revelation 12, actually, before we do that, yes, before we do that, let's go to Job.
Okay.
And so Job is kind of, I feel like, a touchy one for a lot of people.
Should we pause and pick up?
What do you mean?
Should this be a part two?
No, I feel like we're close to like a natural conclusion for this part.
Yeah. Okay. Job.
But we will definitely continue this conversation.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Just the beginning of Job.
Okay. Job 1.
Yeah, Job 1. Let's see. Actually, not Job 1. 1.
Job 1. 1. In the beginning, Job.
In the beginning, Job was a man with lots of stuff. That's a summary by Paul.
And he lived in Uz.
Job, I almost said Genesis. Job 1, starting in verse 6. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them. Okay. Pause. We don't get very far.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, pause. So we can look at that in the mod norm traditional view.
Sure, yes.
Which is just, apparently Satan had some access to go present himself before Yahweh.
Yes.
What?
Right.
I thought evil couldn't be in the presence of the Lord.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. Yes.
So explain that to me.
Sure.
How are both these things true?
Yeah.
Well, they're probably not. And so that jumps into the idea, and I mean, for the sake of how long we've been on this episode already, I'm just going to say it quick. But it's like we get this view. We're in here, when we look at the Hebrew, we see Hasatan, which we've mentioned a few times.
We have, yeah.
Which is the definite article, the. So it's talking about the Satan.
Yes.
And so that doesn't refer to a... It's not a proper pronoun referring to a specific individual, but it's referring to a thing that holds a title.
Yeah.
And so it's like, what is the Satan, the accuser?
Hmm.
It's like, well, he's just that. He's an accuser. He's a little attorney over here just being like, yeah, this person did a lot of bad stuff. And that's exactly what we see happen in this part in Job in chapter 1.
Yeah.
Is he presents himself and God says, hey, Job is pretty good.
Yeah.
He's a pretty good guy.
Yeah.
He's like, doubt. That's his job.
That is his job.
He's accusing the righteous.
Yes.
Okay, so that is a job title in the counsel of God.
Are you tying that into Genesis 3?
Potentially. Well, so let's hold that thought.
Okay.
And now I want to go back to Revelation 12.
This is not a presentation of theology. This is a presentation of consider this.
That's exactly right.
Yes.
Because it's like, here are these verses in Scripture. How do we keep these consistent with one another?
And it's also like, hey, there's more there than maybe you've read in that one verse that you randomly open your Bible to.
Yeah. Well, and also it's the idea of these thoughts were like, oh yeah, Satan fell before the creation of the earth. Mm-hmm. And then boom, 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 blam, blam, here we are. And it's like, well, actually, it doesn't say that.
Right.
So where do we get that idea from?
Yeah, exactly.
It actually doesn't say that at all. So what does it say?
No, yeah. And I think
an
actual traditional view, not a modern traditional view, that does kind of make a lot of sense is that Satan fell within the first 100 years of creation.
Mm.
It does make a lot of sense and doesn't at the same time.
Yeah.
Because that would force a consistency of time frame.
Mm.
But where people get that from, which I find interesting,
yeah,
is that we start learning how old Adam is after he's out of the garden.
Yes.
And we learn how old Adam is based on the birth of Seth.
Mm-hmm.
So we get that information and we go, okay, from the point of creation until the birth of Seth, I think is 120 years, which is an interesting number.
Yes, it is.
And so people go, all right, it's roughly 100 years from the birth of, from the beginning of creation. It's somewhere in that time frame Satan fell.
Which is funny because, well, before the fall, man didn't die.
Correct.
So our biological clock hadn't even started.
Right. So it would have to be retroactive from the birth of Seth.
Yeah. It's like, so the fall happened, like the birth of Seth was 120 years after the fall?
It also
Or after Adam's creation? We don't actually know that.
Well, it also means that the literal time in the garden was actually 100 years. It was a century.
Yeah.
Which is like, all right, but... But I feel like people that do believe that, which I may or may not be one of them, is...
You'll never know.
It would also hold consistent with a literal thousand-year reign of Christ.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of literalists in numbers and things like that. So, like, yeah, I get that.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, so... Yes, hold that. There's a lot in there.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, so Revelation 12 in verse 8, again, we're talking about the dragon here.
Yes.
It says, the dragon and the angels fought back.
Okay.
And it says in verse 8, it says, but he was defeated, and there was no longer any place for them in heaven.
Mm. Okay.
But it, so we see in Job, it's like we get this image of this guy's 9 to 5 is to accuse the righteous.
Sure.
And now we see in Revelation, it's like there was a place for him, but now there's no longer a place for him.
Okay. So I'm going to, so here's the thing.
Yeah.
If that means that if Satan falls either between Genesis 1:1 and Genesis 1:2, which is assuming that Genesis 1:1 is the creation of all things, which I don't find consistent, or is created and falls before Genesis 1:1.
Yeah.
Which I would probably lean more that way if that's where we're
at. Well, that's even the one verse that I didn't bring up, which is, or chapter, which is Psalm 74.
Mm.
Which we'll talk about it in the future.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe we should lead off an episode with that.
We definitely could.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Write that down.
Okay. Well.
But what that means is, and what can be consistent with this, and I'm presenting another side to everything you're presenting
as
you go through it.
Well, because my thoughts right now are pretty nuanced, I think, still, without any definiteness.
Sure.
Definitiveness.
Yeah, but I think that it's consistent.
Yeah.
As they listen through. because of the other side that I'm bringing up.
Yes.
It's like it keeps this in one line. But so if in Revelation 12 we see the fall of Satan and his angels as they no longer have a place in heaven.
Mm.
But then in Job 12 we see, or Job 1, we see the Satan or the office of the accuser, someone from the office of the accuser, comes into the council of the sons of God. That would be inconsistent with Revelation 12, which means that the fall would have to happen after Job, or the accuser as an office still exists in heaven, and there are angels or beings that are still functioning in that office, but the Satan or the ancient serpent and his angels are no longer in heaven. But the job of an accuser is still consistent with the job title that exists in heaven currently. Mm. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Well, so it does.
Okay.
And so this is the thing that I guess where my thoughts have been led because of going through this.
Yeah, yeah.
Is one, it makes me challenge the question or the statement that there was only one fall.
Okay.
And it's like, okay, well, actually, there's in these moments and when they happened, there's evidence to like to point us to this isn't just one thing that happened one time.
Okay.
This is a thing that seems to have happened multiple times.
Mm.
And this isn't even bringing up Genesis 6 yet.
Sure.
Where we see another potential fall.
Yeah, but that one doesn't take place in the heavens.
Correct. But it does take place with heavenly beings.
It does.
And so it's like, okay, so here are these moments where you see these beings. I mean, even again with like the Deuteronomy 32.
I guess it takes place in the heavens, but not necessarily in heaven.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's like, I guess I'm referring to like these beings.
Sure.
So it's like, but we also see with the, in Deuteronomy 32, the sons of God that he places over the nations.
Yeah.
And then we see later in Psalms where they are ruling unrighteously.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't make them unrighteous.
Sure.
He put good beings, beings that were obedient to him.
Yeah.
And then they turned. That didn't happen before the fall, clearly.
Yeah.
Because the nations didn't exist yet.
Yeah.
So it's like we're seeing these points of like several things happened. This wasn't a one-time event.
Sure.
But there were these multiple events where things turned away from the Lord.
Mm.
Beings turned away from the Lord.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't be surprising because we do that all the time too.
That's true.
It's like, why wouldn't it be consistent with the other creation?
Yeah.
But then the other thing it makes me question, and it's specifically because of the book of Job, is there's a big thing where, I think this is in the New Testament, where it says, like, the Lord does not tempt anyone to sin.
Mm, okay.
And I know I'm misquoting that, but...
Yes.
But it's like, I know I am. That's the idea of it. You could say it right for me if you want.
No, go ahead.
But it's the idea, like, he tests people.
Mm.
He tests their loyalty.
Sure.
And what do we see in Job? Nothing in Job tempts him to sin. But it tests, is he loyal to Yahweh?
Yeah, that's a good point.
And who's carrying that out is the Satan. It's the accuser
who's
carrying it out.
Right.
But if Satan, as we know him from the New Testament, the evil bad guy.
Yeah.
Wouldn't he tempt him to sin?
Sure.
Wouldn't that be his approach? Because that's what he does. He deceives us.
Mm. We don't necessarily see that in the temptation of Jesus, though.
Well, we see that temptation to sin.
To test the loyalty to God.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
But not necessarily to sin. In the way that you're referring to it.
Yeah. And this, it's actually a bit of a nuanced conversation as well.
Sure.
Testing versus tempting.
Yes.
But yeah, so essentially what I'm saying in overall, to kind of wrap this up a little bit, try to put this really nasty bow on it. This bow is way out of whack.
Yes.
Is I think we're potentially seeing a lot of different things happening.
Yeah.
One, we're seeing actual evil beings.
Yes.
Beings that are disobedient to Yahweh.
Yeah.
And we're seeing them being cast out.
Yeah.
But we're also seeing beings that no longer have a job that's worth doing.
Okay.
And I think that's even this idea that in a way that we see where because of the cross, because of Jesus' death and resurrection, there's no need for an accuser.
Mm.
Because all accusations are rendered meaningless.
I see what you're saying.
Because of the sacrifice of Christ.
Yeah.
So why is there's no longer a need to accuse the righteous day and night?
Yeah.
Because now the righteous are covered in the blood of the Lamb.
Sure.
So your accusations have no bearing.
Yes. I see what you mean.
So it's kind of like opening this up to like, well, when did Satan fall? It's like, well, what are we talking about?
Yeah.
Because in a way it's like, well, potentially Satan, in quotation marks, could have fallen many times. We see different events where things have cast out of heaven.
Sure.
But we also see at the rendering of the cross that the need for someone to accuse the righteous isn't necessary anymore.
Mm.
Your job is obsolete.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Because even looking at Abraham,
yeah,
who righteousness was counted to Abraham.
Yes.
Is what Genesis says. How was it counted to Abraham?
Mm.
Probably in the way of Job.
Yeah.
A man also from Uz.
That's true.
Which is interesting. And I get what you're saying. But I think maybe the main takeaway from this episode at the moment is the idea that there's a lot more going on. And these, like the tying in of all of this stuff creates the opportunity for maybe there are other things going on than we assume. And every time the Bible says Satan or the evil one, it may not be referring to the exact same person.
Correct.
Unless it literally says that it is,
yeah.
Which is why I think it does literally say that it is.
Mm.
So in Revelation 12, I think it's specifically talking about
It's tying all these things together.
Yeah, it's trying to go back and say, this is the same person. Right?
Potentially.
Yeah, I don't mean in yeah. Job.
No, I know in Revelation.
Yeah, in Revelation it's saying the Satan, the ancient serpent,
yeah,
the devil, tying all those into one being. You're saying that may not be happening.
That's something to talk about too, even like what's John's intent there.
Yeah. I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like this.
It's kind of fun, but it's like, I feel like it kind of opens up this view of something that we haven't questioned a lot.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait, no, let's question that thought.
Yeah. So this.
It questions two main things is what is evil and what is bad.
Yeah.
In our view. Because it's like, and again, going back to Job, that's where the thing where when he's monologuing to Job,
yeah,
he brings up things that cause destruction on the earth, that cause struggling and suffering.
Yeah.
But he's not saying that they're evil.
Yeah.
I'm specifically referring to like Leviathan and the other one. I can't think of his name right now. Behemoth.
Yes.
And it's like these are these chaos monsters.
Yeah.
But God doesn't say they're evil.
Sure.
He said they're actually part of my plan.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So I'm going to wrap it up with this.
Yeah, please.
And then we got to get into this in a different way on a different episode and probably multiple episodes. And the funny thing is this whole conversation started with stars.
Yes. And it's still on there.
So when did Satan fall? And I think the answer from this episode is which Satan? 3, 2, 1.
You beeped yourself.
So you'll have to beep it.
I love it.